back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively bringing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. It is a big week in Hampstead. My pal Chris up at Greenmount Station is finally getting his sports wagering situation in hand. They're under control this week, and they will be open for business. I will be there on Friday bringing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour to you, all presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'll have some Raven Scratch-Offs to give away, our friends at Goodwill. Had Lisa Rosiniak on this week talking about Halloween, so get your Halloween shopping done at Goodwill. And, of course, our friends at Window Nation. It's getting a little chilly outside. Good time for Windows, 866-90-NATION. Also, back in Dundalk next week, next Friday, the 4th, we're going to be at the Drug City, at the fountain at Drug City, having a crab cake. Having a crab cake at Drug City, who knew? Luke Jones is here. Who knew that the Ravens could actually hold on to win a fourth quarter? And was slipping away there for a little while. This blowing double-digit leads at home and a phantom call on a field goal that we're still waiting to see who breathed wrong on the Browns line of scrimmage. Luke, they escaped again on Sunday, and this is short rest for Thursday night, and Tampa stunk all day Sunday in Charlotte. I would just say the prospects are up when you can run the football the way that they chose to run the football on Sunday with Gus Edwards.
Well, they've kind of been running the football pretty well for a while now, though. If you go back to beyond week one where they've really struggled, they've actually been pretty efficient. In fact, Sunday, as you mentioned this, and I don't disagree with your general point, but at 3.6 yards per carry was actually their second worst yards per carry of the season.
Just blame that on Kenyon Drake. That's all.
Sure. But the commitment certainly was there, and it was very evident that the Ravens went into this one expecting to run the ball. And why not when you look at how Cleveland's run defense had fared over the course of the season? So I don't know if Lamar Jackson completing 9 passes is going to win you many ball games. I'm not sure Mark Andrews being blanked in the receiving column, although certainly picked up a first down and carried the ball one time for 4 yards. That's going to be the formula. I don't know if you can go quite so heavy with your personnel on a weekly basis compared to what we saw on Sunday, but it got the job done. And as you mentioned, I don't even know if I'd say the Ravens finished this game as much as they survived. And certainly it helps to be on the right end of a couple key calls late, you know, the false start and the offensive pass interference that I think was offensive pass interference. But how many times do we see that not called in situations like that where the referees tend to swallow their whistles, keep their flags in their pocket? At least
that was a hometown call almost, right? Like, I mean, and it was an obvious arm
bar right call,
push.
Right?
When you extend your arm like that, it should get called. To your point, sometimes it doesn't get called, especially on a touchdown that decides the game.
Right. Especially when it's the offensive player that is the offender. How many times do we see situations like that? Unless it's a defensive player doing something in this day and age, you don't typically see that called. But as I wrote at BaltimorePositive.com, and I know you've spent some time talking about the running game and what that can mean for them moving forward. And certainly the most encouraging development of the afternoon in my mind was Gus Edwards looking healthy, looking like Gus Edwards. But for me, it was really the special teams that saved the day. Not just talking about Malik Harrison blocking the kick, not just talking about Justin Tucker making the 55 yarder earlier in the fourth quarter that gave them the 10-point lead. But how about the fact that this team was sleepwalking through the first quarter? And it was a 69-yard punt from Jordan Stout that really flipped the field position early in the second quarter. They get a 3-and-out, and then Devin Duvernay snaps off the long punt return and put them on a very short field. I thought those two plays early in the second quarter completely changed the game because this was not trending well. On a day when the Super Bowl 47 team was there, the defense was completely gashed in that opening quarter, and the offense moved the ball, but again, some red zone woes that continue to be an issue that going to be something they need to work out and address, not just for this quick turnaround against Tampa Bay, but in a big picture sense. We've seen the last month or so the red zone offense kind of go a little sideways. So it's a win. It's an AFC North game. You can go back in history and find plenty of games where even when the Ravens have been much better than the Browns, which is most seasons, right? You'll still find some of these ugly, grinded out, low scoring, close affairs, and certainly Sunday was no different, but there was just enough positives to take away. But again, I thought the Ravens survived it as much as they finished because for whatever reason, the defense and the offense over the final 10 minutes or so, they seemed all too content to follow some of the same elements of that script that's become all too maddening here in 2022.
Well, Luke, as much as we've beaten up the defense in recent weeks, I mean, you don't blow double-digit leads home and away every week of the season without the defense playing a pretty key role in that. The notion that they can get after a quarterback, and look, Jacoby Brissett was fine. He was fine enough to win on Sunday. Certainly not Spurgeon Win or a guy who's not a credible NFL quarterback. But I would say for where they are defensively, JPP, Houston back out there, just they're a different outfit at this point than maybe they were 5 or 6 weeks ago. And I don't know where I am with 35. I don't know where I am with DeSean Jackson, right? They bring in the over-the-hill gang here because that's all you can do on August 24th. You're not going to the Packers practice squad to grab a defensive lineman. You're going out and saying, is there a 30-something year old out there? This is the Belichick's been doing this the whole century, right? But will that hold? I mean, can that look good on October the 23rd and not look so good on December 15th? Because that's kind of where I am. These guys that come back, they get a little bit of a burst, and then you see them week 6, week 8, week 10, the weather changes. I don't know if that's sustainable. And certainly defensively, all their money was spent on the backside. You know, Marcus Williams not there now. I do wonder, these young players that I see running around a little bit saying, all right, is this going to be good enough to hold up? Then I look at the schedule and I say, who are they playing the next 6 weeks? I mean, they have a window here to put a little distance, at least between them and the Steelers and the Browns at this point.
Well, it's a two-team race in the division. And look, that's not to say that the Steelers aren't going to have days where they wake up on the right side of the bed and they have a, you know, they have a young rookie quarterback and they do have some talented skill players, but they more often than not in the first half of the season have been more lacking than looking like a formidable team. I think we can at least say that much. And Mike Tomlin, I think, would agree with me in saying that. But
it's the worst team he's ever had. I mean, you on paper and on reality. And if somehow he gets them to 7 or 8 wins, it'd be a miracle.
Sure. Yeah. And that's not to say I don't think they'll be better as the year goes on. But, you know, kind of going back to what you were saying about speaking about the Ravens and some of the older players they're dealing, you know, that they're depending on. I mean, Jason Pierre-Paul certainly has played a lot from the moment he stepped back on the field, you know, from the moment he stepped in Owings Mills. But Justin Houston coming back was huge. I think certainly Tyus Bowser is going to be a big part of what they do sooner rather than later. David Ajabo is the wild card. He's going to be activated at some point in the not too distant future, whether it's this week or the next couple weeks. But he's a rookie, second round pick, a kid that was considered a raw talent even before the Achilles injury back in March, has had no spring or summer. I think expectations need to be tempered there. That doesn't mean he can't contribute, but it could be a little more fleeting for him. But I think what was encouraging, and it's not just Justin Houston coming back and having 2 sacks. It's not just the fact that they took down Brissett 5 times. I think for me, it was finally seeing an edge rusher rotation that did not include Adafe Owe playing 85% of the snaps, did not include Justin Houston playing a huge percentage of the snaps as we saw the first couple weeks, which, who knows, may have contributed to the groin injury that kept him out for 3 weeks. But
that's what you want, right? You want Houston and JPP in 15 to 20 plays a game, right? Yeah, ideally.
Ideally, now Pierre-Paul, he played 38. They had 60 defensive snaps. He played 38, which still a little higher than I'd like to see, especially knowing you have a Thursday night game. You know, Calais Campbell's not exclusively an edge rusher, of course. He played 40 snaps. That's better than what we were seeing earlier in the season, where some of these guys, you're just saying, that's just too many snaps. Owe, which I do think probably a product of the fact that they have played 2 run-first teams the last 2 weeks, and Owe has had his issues setting the edge at times. He played 33 snaps, coming off of a week against the Giants where he had set his season low for snaps played. So you add Tyus Bowser into that mix. Malik Harrison is playing more Sam linebacker than anything else at this point, although still plays some on the inside. You're at a point now where you're starting to look at this, and you know they brought up Kennard from the practice squad. You know how much he's going to factor in. Who knows? He's played quite a bit in the league, but he's a guy that's a little bit older as well. So, you know, you want to be in a position where you have at least four, if not five, given that week's matchup, edge guys that you can kind of rotate in when the Ravens have been at their best. And I know some people will say, well, they haven't really had a great collection of edge rushers in a few years. And I would agree with that. But when they've been in a better position at that spot, it's been at least four guys, sometimes five, that they've rotated through, and you're trying to keep them fresh. You mentioned some of these guys coming back from injury or veteran players. I mean, he's not an edge rusher, but J.K. Dobbins is a great example of this. He came back, and he's on the shelf again, and he's having the knee scoped.
Well, that's the fear for Ronnie Stanley, right? Like, we're 3 weeks into Ronnie Stanley going out there and playing 60 to 80% of the snap. They got to play again on Thursday night. I think everything about Sunday was a little weird because Harbaugh even mentioned, and I've never heard him mention this prior to a 4 day rest, that, we want to make sure we have somebody fresh to play on, whether it's McCary, whether it's Morgan Moses, moving guys around the line. Sunday was a little bit sloppy in its own way because I think John heard footsteps of Tampa in the back of his mind, especially as the game got tight on Sunday and you got to go on the road and play Tom Brady. The notion that we're going to have Owe out there 55 snaps like Terrell Suggs in his prime, that's what Owe should be doing, right? I mean, the young guy should be the guy getting 50, 60 snaps. The JPPs and the imported pass rushers should be out there in specialty situations. They shouldn't be out there in first and 10.
Yeah, I mean, you'd like that, but that hasn't been where they've been. You know, that's just not reality for right now. And for part of that is Odafe Owe hasn't played like a first round pick. He's had his moments. You know, he makes plays. I'm not saying he's a total bust. It's too soon to say anything like that anyway. He hasn't been a bust, but has he been the guy that you're really excited that they drafted in the first round? Well, since the first six or seven games of his rookie season, I don't know if that's the case.
Well, throw Patrick Queen in there, who played the game of his career on Sunday. We've been waiting tick-tock, 3 years for that, right?
Yeah,
him to go out there and play full-time, run around, and be some sort of a factor in the game. He was.
Yeah, and credit where credit is due. Patrick Queen is someone that I've been critical of, and really the last two or three weeks, he's played some of his best football. But I would also say, going back to his rookie year, we've seen him do that for a couple weeks at a time. It's doing that week after week after week. It's that consistency, which is really the big key for talking about young first, second, third round picks, those early round picks. When they're in their first year or two, well, I would hope they flash, right? If not, then you definitely made a bad pick, but it really is that consistency. But to go back to the point that you made about Tampa, I think it was a delicate balance here for the Ravens. And this is the case for anyone that's getting ready to go play a Thursday night game, specifically on the road where you have the travel to take into account as well. It is tough in this scenario because, you want to put your best foot forward against Tampa on Thursday night. And as much as the Buccaneers are scuffling, we also know this is a week-to-week league. You know, we start doing this, well, they looked really bad, and this team looked really good. We see how that doesn't add up.
Dude, the crappier they looked on Sunday, the more pissed off I figure Brady's going to be on Thursday night. And, like, I throw everything out that happened on Sunday as it relates to Thursday night, because going on the road, 3 days rest, the Ravens will be tired one way or another. They could have been a much more of a slog it out kind of game. I didn't feel like it was like the most physical game against the Browns, but I didn't play in it. And I don't have to get my body ready and get on a plane tomorrow, literally.
Right. So, but you look at that and you can say, okay, well, what concessions might you make in this game? Well, they came very close to losing this football game. So, and it's a division game. Keep in mind, if you're going to talk about which games you want to have as opposed to which games aren't going to hurt you quite as much, AFC North conference game as opposed to an NFC team that's not going to factor in, that result's not going to factor in nearly as much in terms of conference tiebreakers, things of that nature. So, that's just some food for thought there, but it's a challenge either way. And especially when you have veteran players, especially when you have some players who were very clearly banged up. We haven't even gotten into this other than me mentioning in passing Mark Andrews not having a single catch. Andrews played a lot. It wasn't as though he was limited in terms of how much he played. Out of their total 64 snaps, he still played 56 of them, which is pretty typical Mark Andrews for 2022, which, by the way, is him playing a lot more than he had in previous years. But you want him out there, right? He's one of the two best tight ends in football at this point. But for him to go without a catch, for him to sit out practice on Wednesday and Thursday. And John Harbaugh said it was a rest day. Andrew said on Friday his body was ready to go. And I never had any doubt that he was going to play, but we know how tough of a customer he's been from the moment he joined the Ravens in 2018 as a rookie. But for him to miss a couple days of practice made it evident that he wasn't 100% and he was pushing through some soreness. He alluded to the fact that the MetLife Stadium turf the previous week is a hard surface to play on. And, you know, not saying he has any kind of significant knee injury.
What a league, right? That we have hard surfaces to play on.
Oh, sure, sure.
I mean, what a league. Billions of dollars, you know, and they can't get the grass right.
Crazy. Well, look at the laundry list of serious injuries sustained. Now, fortunately, as far as we know, the Ravens did not have any serious injuries on Sunday. Josh Bynes left the field a couple times, but not something that's considered serious, at least the early indications. But look around the league, the number of serious injuries you see. And yeah, some of those do occur on grass, right? You're not going to eliminate injuries from football unless you eliminate football itself, right? I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. However, to your point, we're talking about a multi-billion dollar operation here. All of them get benefiting from public funding, right? You know, when you look around different stadia, I mean, virtually all of them have been publicly funded to some large degree.
Oh, trust me. Now that I've been thrown out, I think about the grossness as I sit here and watch not on a daily basis. I watch it 4 days a week.
Right. But my point is with that is so much of that stadium, they've been gifted, right? In varying shapes and forms to not invest, to have the best possible playing surface that you can have is just, it's shameful. I mean, it really is. And, you know, that's where you look at games like that, and look, there are going to be other games the Ravens are going to play on turf. So, you know, it's part of the reality right now. We can talk about it in a big picture sense, but it's part of the deal right now. So, yeah, you had some of that load management, let's say, over the course of this past week with practices, and they had a number of guys listed as questionable, and all of them but Ben Cleveland played. So, you know, nothing to really see there in that regard. But they did have a bunch of guys that were hurting and really sore this past week. And that's not going to help. Even though Tampa, you know, you go down the Raymond James Stadium and yeah, it's natural grass and better surface, theoretically, you're still going to have a bunch of sore guys going through their walkthroughs this week. I don't think you'll even see the Ravens really practice. It's going to be much more of a walkthrough kind of format over the course of the week leading into Thursday night. And we'll see how that goes. We've seen the Ravens have some success on Thursday nights, and we've seen them have some games like, well, they had against the Dolphins last year on a Thursday night. So I think the good news, and you alluded to this, and I would agree with this, the game had its moments of physicality. I mean, it was still an AFC North game at its core where both teams wanted to run the football, though I think the Browns should have run the ball more with Nick Chubb, especially late in the game. But I think the good thing was this, if you recall last year, they were coming off of that overtime game against the Vikings where they played a boatload of snaps. And I think that really hindered them big time. In this game, you know, they played 60 snaps defensively, you know, officially, and 64 on the offensive side of the ball. It's not a crazy workload. So, you know, we'll have to see how that plays out. But you would expect, again, lots of load management, so to speak. And I know Calais Campbell was asked about it in the postgame locker room. You know, asked about a Thursday night game, and Calais in his, you know, always takes the high road, always diplomatic, but kind of just gave that head shake. You know how he feels about Thursday night football, speaking as a 36-year-old defensive end that's in his 15th year. It's tough.
Dude, we're 20 years into Thursday night football. It sucks. It's always sucked. It'll always suck. Now that they're making so much money on it, they'll be playing 7 nights a week. I mean, they really, like, we're heading in some sort of weird direction where something that everybody universally hates, they're doing it anyway because it makes them money.
But we don't hate it because we watch it. I agree with you. I don't have much taste for Thursday night.
Dude, I don't even have Amazon Prime. I'm stealing it. I'll admit it. My kid has an address. I use it right on the computer I'm looking at right now.
Because
it doesn't work on a television. It doesn't even come on television. That's how old I am, Luke.
But that's what everyone does on streaming services. You share with your friends and family, and someone has Amazon, someone has Netflix, someone has Peacock. You know, you go down
now
the
that
list.
I'm a Padres fan again, I need to steal your codes for next year so I can watch late night baseball. All right. Luke Jones is here. Load management is the term for the week. We'll let you kids look that up. Luke's going to be, I should say, in Owings Mills. Luke's not going to be in Owings Mills. Nobody's going to be in Owings Mills. They're going to be in Tampa. You can find me on Friday in the post game of hopefully a victory over Tom Brady and the GOAT on at Greenmount Station. You come up and you can bet on football soon at Greenmount Station up in Hampstead, where they have a delicious crab cake. I'm looking forward to getting back up there, seeing Chris and everybody on Friday. We'll be in Dundalk at the Fountain at Drug City. Only I could go into Costas, sit down and watch a baseball game and wind up walking out doing my show down the street. So big appreciation, everybody at Drug City and Chuck and everybody to get ready there. That's next Friday. We'll be down there. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Goodwill and Window Nation. Luke will be around. Of course, WNST tech service available for any breaking news and injuries and all that stuff. No Philadelphia Phillies World Series updates on the WNST tech service. Not for now, anyway. It's all brought to you by Coons Baltimore Ford. And, of course, Royal Farms bringing you all of Luke's action. Make sure you're coffeeing up like Justin Tucker and get some fried chicken as well. We got plenty of football to talk about. It's a short week to turn around for Thursday night. I have written a columnist that you'll hear out here at AM 1570. And Luke has all sorts of thoughts before and after in a quick turnaround week. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore positive.